Hey everyone, I am Reva and just want to take a moment and thank you for listening to our studio podcast. Although we are here in Greenville, South Carolina, we are grateful for your support to see the message of Jesus go out all over the world. In case you are not aware, we have a YouTube channel, which you can find the link in our podcast bio. We hope you enjoy this week's talk and it encourages you and it helps you to be the human God designed you to be. So with that, let's get right to it.
We've been in the book of Ephesians for the last month and a half. And I had planned today to go into chapter 5 and chapter 6. But I told the team this week, I can't get out of chapter 4. Chapter 4 is like this magnetic force that I just can't quite move on. I actually tried hard, and then I said, I give up. We're going to live in chapter 4 today. And be honest with you, I got some insight that actually kind of surprised me. I had never looked at it in a certain way, and understanding that if you don't actually embrace chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3, and chapter 4, then chapter 5 and 6 just become the list of rules and regulations, a checklist. And so today we want to marinate a little bit. We want to kind of saturate ourselves a little bit in chapter 4. Reva did a brilliant job last week. If you weren't here, you need to go listen to the podcast. And then Candace the previous week, and then I kicked it off. We've just been building throughout this book, and I don't want to review the previous week because of time, but please go back and listen because it's actually building and we're going somewhere. This letter that Paul wrote to a group of people, and some scholars believe a group of churches in Ephesus. And Ephesus was the third largest city in the ancient world behind Rome and Athens. They say maybe 250,000 people in the city and then potentially more in the surrounding area. So it was a port city that was actually a gateway into the Asia Minor. It was a very important city. It was very culturally diverse, ethnic diversity, cultural diversity, art, philosophy, spirituality. The type and dimension and volume of diversity was remarkable. This wasn't the moniker, but when I study about this city, the mantra of Ephesus would be something like this: whatever you want to worship, however you want to live your life, and whatever you believe it to be true, we accept it. It was so diverse and so free. But here's the challenge. Christianity was this brand new kid on the block. The idea of this man, Jesus, he's fresh in people's mind of this man that died this brutal death. Now, sometimes we don't realize that other men have stepped onto the scene claiming to be some form of a Messiah. And when they killed, their entire movement would die. So a lot of people expected, oh, this Jesus movement, yeah, that was just another one of those. See, you and I are 2,000 years down the road living in the wake of one man's life as part of this chapter. And so at this point, we recognize this movement's not dying, it's exploding. And the more persecution, the darker this world gets, our faith in God actually accelerates. It flourishes, it thrives. But this was not the case in this letter to Ephesus, because Jesus had died about 2 to 3 decades earlier. So it was fresh, it was new, it was like that was just a guy. So you have a small group of people in the context of Ephesus that had chosen to follow Jesus, and Paul had helped found this church in Ephesus, and he's writing this letter while he's in prison, and he's writing them this letter, and we've been studying it the last month and a half. But what I want you to understand is Paul is actually introducing them to a very new world, a very new reality. And even in this incredibly diverse city, religiously, ethnically, culturally, politically, spiritually, I mean, just go down the list. The one faith, the one religion that was unaccepted was Christianity. So imagine being in a city where everything goes. Whatever you want to do, you can do it. You have full freedom. You're in charge of your own self. Except if you said yes to Jesus, you were not allowed. You were not accepted. So Paul is talking to a group of people that were rejected, not accepted. And so he writes this letter and he's rewriting the narrative in their mind. He's rewriting the script. The world around them told them they were of no value. So Paul writes, God chose you. While the culture around them rejected their religion, which is faith in God, what we call Christianity, God said, you're my son and you're my daughter. While the society around them cut off all access and ability to become a citizen, to own land, while that was not allowed, God said, don't worry. They may call you strangers and foreigners, but I call you citizens of my kingdom. Paul is reminding them, do not let the circumstances, the reality, and the culture determine your value. Because God said, you're chosen. You're my citizen, and you're my son, and you're my daughter. It's interesting that you can buy a bottle of water at Costco for 25 cents, and it's worth 25 cents in Costco. You can take the same bottle, go to a stadium, and it's worth $8. You see, your environment determines your value. And in his kingdom, he determines your value. You don't determine your value. The person next to you does not determine the value, let alone a culture and a society does not determine your value. It's trying to. It's attempting to. And unfortunately, some of us are actually starting to believe it. Or maybe it has been what you believed. I'm standing here today to tell you the opposite. You might be 25 cents in Costco, but in a stadium, you're worth a lot more than that. Because he's the one that determines your value. And if we don't actually learn to embrace this identity of what God said about us, then chapter 5 and 6, which is about husbands and wives and children and bondservants and masters and slaves, it's about humanity. If we don't actually embrace this identity that Paul is introducing, we'll become incredible performers. We will perform so good. And we will exhaust ourselves. We'll get to the end of our life thinking, what did I just give my life to? A bunch of performance. And Paul is saying, listen, don't go into chapter 5 and 6 yet. He's saying, you've got to understand who you are. Because when you actually live from inside out and not outside in, it's a whole different situation. And today, I want to call you to a different reality. The weaker your identity, the more you blame the outside world. The stronger your identity, the less you blame everything around you. It's interesting because it's actually indicative. If you find yourself blaming the people around you for the problems in your life, if you find yourself saying, this country, this culture, if you find yourself shaming and blaming everything around you, it's potentially indicative that your identity is not strong enough. It's not rooted where it needs to be rooted. So today I want to talk about inside out, not outside in. Today I want to expose anything that is hindering you to be what God has designed you to be. So this talk is not for your neighbor. This talk is not for that friend that didn't come today. This talk is definitely not for your spouse. In fact, it's not for your kids. It's for you. So don't listen today with this, oh man, so-and-so needs to hear this. Listen today and take it very personal. Our identity is in him and it's from him. God is bigger than our stories. Have you ever been told by someone, for some of you, it's your people you do life with, it could be your mom or your dad or your children or even your spouse or your friend or a colleague, and they say something that kind of sounds like this: why do you keep doing the things that you do? Can you stop doing that? And then you keep doing it. Have you ever had that? Like, my wife will tell me, why do you do these things? I don't know, I'm just keep doing them. It's like I just can't stop doing them. It's like you're telling me to do something that I don't know how to actually stop doing. I think it starts when you're like 2 years old. Because you're starting to move and get mobile, and in your parents' eyes, you're like the developing menace. You're like climbing on things, you're breaking things, you're checking things out. But when you're a two-year-old, you're not a menace. You're just like, I'm just exploring the world around me. I remember a time I was in junior high. My brother and I were separated by 2 years, and I'm the oldest. And I did some research. They say the oldest are the higher IQ, so I have to remind my brother. I didn't make that up. That's statistically very accurate. And Brian and I got this idea. Why don't we get a tennis ball, soak it in hairspray, light it on fire, and play catch with it? And I still remember my mom's face looking out the window. Her eyes, I've never seen them that big. My mom, I think she made some comment about the frontal lobe not fully developing. But Brian and I were like, there's nothing wrong with our frontal lobe. The smart thing is, just don't hold the ball too long. I mean, we do things that we don't know why we do them, but we do them anyways. And telling us to not be a junior high boy when we are a junior high boy is like asking the sun to stop or the earth to stop rotating. It's not possible. So it's so funny that even though we're told not to do things, we still end up doing them. And Paul is actually addressing this on a very intrinsic human soul level because he understands, I believe, what he's doing. He's setting us up of how to be husbands that love our wives, our wives love our husbands, how we love each other, brothers and sisters. And anyone that's in charge of us, we know how to serve them well. He's setting us up, but he wants us to wrestle with where and who and what our identity is. And this is what I want to focus on today. I've spent countless hours with people over the last specifically 30 years of my life in what I do as a pastor, as a communicator, as a leader. And it's so intriguing. I don't know if I said this publicly, but my daughter is studying psychology. And I'm so excited because she's going to get clinically trained in all of it. And I said, Sayla, I have 30 years experience with humans and you're getting clinically trained. We're going to be a great team. We're going to be a great team. You can have all the theory, but I'll tell you how it really is. And then you can correct me with theory. I mean, it's going to be a beautiful partnership. She doesn't know it yet, but that's part of my plan. But it's really interesting when I interact with people and the amount of blaming that's happening when I talk to someone in a really hard spot. Like, what's the problem? It's my wife. She says these things and I get angry. I get mad and I act out and what's the problem? It's her. She's the problem. I talked to the other one and they said, yeah, it's his fault. He does this thing. I tell him not to do it. He does it anyways. And it's his fault why I'm so stressed out and full of anxiety. Talk to other people and then they cannot figure out what is happening in my life. They can't add 1 + 1 = 2. They blame everything and anyone around them except take full responsibility. This is why Paul is emphatically expressing to the readers of this letter, you are chosen, you're adopted, you're heirs, and you're citizens. You're dealing with an identity crisis in the deep inside of the readers of this letter. I want you to turn with me to Ephesians chapter 4. We're going to start in verse 17. We're going to read a few verses, unpack them, and then we'll work our way through about 3 different portions of scripture in chapter 4. If you don't have a Bible, get your phone out, download the Bible app. This is not something you just want to listen to. Jackie Hill Perry said recently, it would do everyone really good to read the book of Ephesians right now. And I concur. Verse 17 of chapter 4. So I tell you this, and insist on it in the Lord, that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do, in the futility, which means fruitlessness or uselessness of their thinking. Verse 18, they are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. Having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to the sensualities as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed. Let's pause right here. These aren't the most encouraging verses, but they're incredibly insightful. And I want you to actually take a moment, instead of skipping over this, trying to get to the citizenship, the heirs, you're the chosen. I want to take a moment and just look at the sobering reality of what's possible. Your mind can get darkened. your heart can get hardened. You can actually live in full-blown ignorance. And Paul is highlighting this. Don't lose the reality that this is actually possible. We live in a broken world. And if you're not careful or aware, you can end up with a hard heart. You can end up with a mind that cannot see clearly. You can end up with the inability to see truth. So Paul is highlighting this. Don't be so arrogant that you don't think it'll happen to you. Now, this is not our identity. It's just important to be aware that I'm not as strong as I thought I was. That's why my reliance on God is so crucial and so important. This is why my identity comes from something unshakable, super faithful. And this is why Paul is highlighting this. Don't be ignorant that it can't happen to you. But what's fascinating, the opening verse, don't live as the Gentiles do. He's not talking to only Jews. He's talking to Gentiles. He's saying, don't live like you are. To quit being the two-year-old. Quit being the junior hires. Like, well, that's what I am. Paul said, not anymore. You're no longer a Gentile. You're no longer separated from the promises of God. I've called you out of that. God has called you to a different relationship. You are now a son. You are now a daughter. You are now chosen. You are now an heir. You are now a citizen. So stop living like you used to live. So I want to challenge you today. You might be going, well, that's who I am. It was who you were. It's what you used to be. It's part of your story, but it's no longer what determines your story. Verse 20, that however, it's not the way of life you've learned. What that tells me is that they actually knew this already, but they forgot. I think for some of us, we used to live and follow God a certain way that was really, we're really proud of it. We're really excited about it. But today we feel flat. Like, what happened? You see, for some of us, we actually are familiar with how to follow God and how to get identity from him, but we've kind of lost our way. And Paul's saying, listen, don't forget, that's not what you've learned, and that's not what I taught you. Don't go backwards, go forwards. Verse 21, when you heard about Christ and were taught in him in accordance with the truth that is in Jesus, you were taught with regard to the former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by deceitful desires, and to be made new in the attitude of your mind. To be made new by the renewing of your mind. Verse 24, and to put on the new self created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Jump down to verse 29. We've got three more verses. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. How many could work on that one a little bit? I know you know somebody that should, but let's be honest about ourselves. How many could improve in that area? My hand's up. And I don't actually want to, but I'm going to. Because it feels good to say what I want to say. But only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit, with whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Get rid of all bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other, just as Christ God forgave you. To bring your attention back to verse 17, he says, stop living like the Gentiles do. Another way that you and I could read that is stop living the way you are living. It's time to upgrade. It's time to level up. The way you talk about each other, the way you talk about yourself, the way you operate in bitterness, rage, anger, all these things, those days are over. We're actually called to live a higher standard. This last week, this phrase came to my mind, and it was, look in the mirror. And I felt like we need to look in the mirror, and I began to realize, like, it's not just looking in the mirror. We like the idea. We look in it every morning. We look at ourselves, and we always have our own self-talk, and some of us don't talk at all, but some of us have this self-talk. We're disgusted with what we see. And some of us are like, man, you are so good-looking. All of us have a different experience with the mirror, and it's a very private experience. It's like it's you and you talking to you, me, myself, and I. I'm not talking about that mirror. I'm talking about the mirrors in your life, which is the people you do life with. You see, it's really easy when you can identify what's going on in here. Because you're like, okay, I need to grow up in that area. You know that thing I did the other day? I can't do that again. I need to become a better man, a better father, a better husband. I need to work on that. I'm going to. And those are beautiful moments, and those should never end. But the mirrors of my wife, my staff, my friend that I'm doing life with, my children are some of the most incredible mirrors in my life. And what's fascinating about when someone else is the mirror to you, they're simply reflecting how they're experiencing you. It's your life hitting them, and they're reflecting right back towards you. The problem is, the challenge is, they're giving you information that you can't see. You don't know, like, that's not possible. How could you experience me that way? We call those blind spots. You see, when you're driving in a car, you got a rearview mirror and you have a two side mirror. They're really helpful, but they don't do the complete job. And I have a sense that some of us are driving through life and we're changing lane. We're going on overpasses and we don't even know that we're hitting people, and people are honking the horn saying, whoa, hold on, pal. And you're like, what are you talking about? I don't see you. They're not there. I can't see you because you're in my blind spot. And that's the most amazing thing about community. That the people that are doing life with you, they will tell you when you're hitting them and they've been honking at you. Husbands, look at me. Your wife has been honking at you for a while. Why are you doing what you are doing? You're like, what are you talking about? This is who I am. This is what I do. And I think you're wrong because I would never do that. That's the problem. It's the blind spot. You have no clue. Wives, the same thing is happening to you from your husband. In fact, some husbands are terrified to talk to you because of what you'll say back. We're not even in chapter 5 yet. Wait till we get there. That's a whole nother situation. What I want you to understand is that if you reduce your growth, if you reduce your growth to just you, myself, and I, you will never reach your full potential. But if you maximize your growth to the people in your life giving you feedback on how they're experiencing you, then you'll reach your full potential. You actually step right into who God had designed you to be. So let's ask some other questions. Like, why do we not trust the people in our life when they give us something, they share something with us that we don't agree with? It's different for everyone, of course, but I would say the baseline is this, is that you live in pride. We are so prideful, and we work hard to not being rejected, so we'll reject first. Before you reject me, I'm going to make sure I reject you. I quit. No, you quit. No, I quit first. Gotcha. And we spend our life just making sure no one can actually let us down, so we protect ourselves by rejecting the people around us. And yet, all that intelligence that was meant to help you to become a better human, you just turned away. So today, I want to call you all to a higher level. I'm not talking about Johnny down the street talking to you. Although strangers are really good at giving us feedback because they don't lose nothing. They have nothing to lose here. That's another conversation. Today, I just want to draw your attention to the one that you're doing life with. Your family, your friends, your colleagues, your boss, your neighbor, well, whoever you do life with. Find out if they've been honking their horn at you and you just didn't know it. In the last, I don't know, I can't quantify it exactly, but I would say this last season, I've found myself in a lot of conversations with a lot of people that are just simply maxed out emotionally and mentally, like they have no margin. And so everything triggers. And I want to challenge you, when you're operating in that dimension, in that reality, there are some deeper issues at play. So if you're here today and this is already overwhelming, could you like, Eric, I can't handle any more feedback. Okay, there are some deeper issues that you're going to want to deal with to lower your margins down so you can actually do the work necessary to expand who you are. I want you to make a note about this. Whenever you're stressed or anxious or living in fear, you'll do whatever you can to get out of it by reducing everything down to, I'm not the problem, you are. This is called first-tier thinking. When we feel a certain level of emotions and anxiety, we boil everything down to there's only two options. I'm right and you're wrong. You pick. But when you enter into another level of thinking, you're open to the possibility that maybe I am the problem. I think Taylor Swift had a song. I saw a book yesterday. It's going to be in somebody's stocking stuffer. And it's a Taylor Swift book. So be prepared for somebody. No, but in all seriousness, some of us, when we get stressed, we become a closed loop. Nothing is allowed in. But if we allow ourselves to become an open loop, it's incredible what's possible. You can actually step into who you really are. And the hardest feedback to receive is the ones you disagree with. So today, I want you to make a note. If you're getting feedback that you disagree with from the people in your life, guess what? That's incredible data and information that's going to help you become who God has designed you to be. When it comes to the people near you, close to you, and committed to you, make note, your inability to trust someone's perspective about you is a sign of immaturity. A sign of maturity is when you're able to listen and hear what they have to say, and you do the work to understand what they're trying to tell you, and you walk away going, okay, I'm going to work on this. That's a sign of maturity. A sign of maturity is not proving something wrong or someone wrong. A sign of maturity is saying, okay, I don't agree with you, but I'm going to take this, and I'm going to go figure out what it is, and I'm going to do the work. And I want to challenge each and every one of you. Don't reduce your growth to your own perspective of when you look in the mirror. Expand your growth to the mirrors in your life that are reflecting back to you how they experience you. Because all of us are called to another dimension of living. Why don't we stand?
Thanks for listening to today's talk. If you're interested in learning more about Studio here in Greenville, you can go check out our website, studiogreenville.com, and you can give us a follow on Instagram. Our handle is studio.greenville. Have a great week.